Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true. It's not worth eating if it lacks the greasy.
Well, hi, everybody. I'm Josh Ozersky, Mr. Cutlets. And this is the Mr. Cutlets Show. You may know me as the national dining columnist for Time Magazine or from my TV video series on the web, Ozersky.tv. But one thing I love is being here at Roberta's wonderful garrison. And I'm here with a very talented chef who's a good friend of mine, Mr. John Fraser of Dovetail.
Check, check.
And also our guest of honor, a beautiful and talented young woman, Melanie Dene.
Present.
Now, Melanie, of course, is the author of My Last Supper, which was one of the most interesting, moving, thoughtful, and physically large photography books that I've seen come across the transom in a long time. And Melanie's book was actually really a kind of a masterpiece of food portraiture. So we're going to talk about its sequel, and we're going to talk about John's opinion about the 3-star firing squad.
Oh.
I recently
we're
had
not
going to
talk about my opinion.
But first, I want to say that you know, we have a sponsor here, John.
Mm.
We don't, you know, Heritage Radio Network is pirate radio. It's from the back of Roberta's in beautiful Bushwick, New York. Everyone loves the pizzas here, the sweetbreads, the arugula. But that doesn't pay all the bills. We are going to get some support today from Barter House. And the Barter House is proud to support the Heritage Radio Network and its community of food lovers. The Barter House works with family vineyards and small bottlers from around the world to bring only the finest and most flavorful wines to market. Committed to sustainable agriculture and artisanal production, the Barter House offers outstanding wines at a range of price points to retailers, restaurateurs, and private collectors. To learn more about the Barter House, please visit them on the web at www.thebarterhouse.com or call 917-463-3076.
Well done.
Very well done.
Now, the Barter House, you see, we try to do
incoming.
Food.
Incoming.
Food.
Oh, and look, the pizza's here now.
I just need to say that I have been on many a radio show, and I have never held in one hand a glass of beer, another a glass of wine, while pizza's being delivered. So cheers to you, Josh.
You know, it used to be when I was in my youth that I would have the pizza. I would have the pizza man come just to shoot and rob him. But now I do it just because I enjoy the pizza so much.
Yes, as you can hear him chewing away.
There's lardo on it, too.
Mm.
Well, Melanie, seeing as how you are both a lady and an accomplished artist, I think you should go first.
Oh, the pressure of that.
Now, can you explain to those of our listeners who haven't seen the book what My Last Supper was?
Well, I'll tell you the origin of My Last Supper. As a I take pictures. I photograph people that are notable or do something. Mostly, I guess, movies, magazines, this and that.
Who are some of those famous people, for example? I want them to know what an A-list
names.
Photographer
you
are.
You want names. That makes me nervous. That
Tom
makes me
Cruise,
clam up.
Oprah.
Tom Cruise. Well, not Oprah, because Oprah.
The president
dies,
you took a picture
yes,
of.
Yes, presidents, movie stars,
they
actors, actresses.
They ask you to
actress.
Take a picture?
Well, they usually liken my arrival to going to the dentist.
Mm.
However, it is pre-planned because
she doesn't hide behind a bush.
Right, no. You're not a paparazzo.
No paparazzo. No paparazzo. No. So what I do is I'm commissioned to go and photograph people. And as I started to photograph chefs, they would do any anything that I wanted them to do. I was like, how about you just take off all your clothes and put a little piece of salami? Well, you can imagine the rest. So I was hooked right away. And I thought, and then I started to sort of hang around with the chefs, you know, groupie it all. And they were eating like pigs. So that was another thing that attracted me to them. And I thought, if I held a gun to their head and said, what if I, if this was your last supper, what would you eat? Where would you eat it? Who would you be with? What would you drink? What would it be? So I tried to get those interviews done beforehand and then dream up a photo shoot. And, you know, I'm a little, shall we say, off the beaten path in my
eyes. John, did you see these photos?
I bought the book.
It's so good.
A book sold. Like,
they're so not what you would, like, Melanie's not really, even though she eats a lot of good food, and, you know, she's kind of a Tribeca grandee, the fact is, she's not really, like, a super, like,
I'm not,
you know,
a size
freak.
18 is what he's trying to say.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying she's not, like, the super foodie geek or whatever, like some of us are. So she had this outsider's perspective, and it's almost like the way, like, a Klaus Oldenburg would come from another country and have this, you know, perspective on American culture. Like, that's what it was like for you.
And that's what it was. It was a snapshot of this world. And I looked at it and I thought, wait, you're well known. Look at this. Let me try to match your personality. Let me take your picture and just try to match your personality. I mean, that's what I aim to do in my work.
Like, so, like, you, I don't know if you saw the book. Like, for example, Bourdain is naked holding a big bone over his crotch. And then there's, like, Gary Danko from San Francisco is in a harem with, like, you know, some, like, portly courtesans.
And that completely matches their personality. I remember saying to my assistant, can you swear on this station?
Yeah, go ahead.
I remember saying, okay, he's going to take off his clothes right now, pull up the bone, and you're on dick watch. Don't let that dick fall out of the bone is all I have to say.
Now, Melly, you're working on another one of these books.
I am. I'm working on My Last Supper, the second course. And the reason that I'm doing the second course is I took a little detour, a little break, a little hiatus, and dipped into the country music world because I thought it would be interesting to know why this entire country is obsessed with country music. And I know one song, Islands in the Stream. Who sang that, Josh?
Oh, that's easy. Maya. Who is this?
Dolly Parton.
That song was actually written by the Bee Gees, believe it or not.
Was it? Seriously? Yes. Are you serious?
No, of course I'm serious.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
And it was remade as Ghetto Superstar with Maya, Pross, and two other people for the Bullworth soundtrack.
Well, I didn't know anything about country music, and everybody else does. So I dipped into that and ate a lot of delicious meat and threes and fried chicken and all that delicious stuff. And now I'm starting My Last Supper, the second course.
All right, now, Sean, let's see here. You having read it too, you know that all the big boys are in My Last Supper. It's got Danielle, the Ripper, Vongo, Massa, people like that. Who should be, in your opinion, off the top of your head, who should be in the new My Last Supper? And
besides yourself.
Jack, can you hear me in there?
Yes, thumbs up.
I wonder if we could give the phone number, so if anyone wants to call in and make suggestions
for suggestions.
Who should be, and they could do that.
And I recommend looking at our Twitters, because we're Twittering from
we're
sitting
Twittering,
here
we're
right
Twittering.
Now.
Well, I'm pizza-ing.
Tweeting.
What,
we're drinking, up. Twittering.
What would be a chef's that you would like to see these kind of, like, you know?
That's a good question. I think it would be interesting to go to other countries, perhaps, but not the ones you would expect. What about, like, Slavic nations and where they would be in their sort of their imagination and that, and the way they see food is very different.
That's very true. Are you Slavic?
No.
Oh. Well, what do you mean? What do you want to just get some random Slav?
No, but I mean,
he wants herring.
Famous chefs. we need a famous somebody like
that. He wants to put me on the spot.
I know he does, and he doesn't remember who's in the book. Josh, give him a break.
Right.
Robichon. There's so many.
All the
big shots. Marco Pierre White, and you know it. I chased your ass down.
Listen.
I'm going to get you this time.
We'll get him in there, but I think we should. The good thing is a lot of them is on the B team that are not that famous yet, but that have a lot of character.
Right.
Now, I'll give you an example of somebody.
Who?
Well, let's see. How about you got a lot of great chefs that are mishuganas. There is, for example,
he looks at me like I know what that means.
The nut. There's a nut like Orhan Yegin, Stone Crazy. You could get the great Ping.
Oh yeah,
Ping is an amazing chef.
Idea.
You know who would be good? Would be obviously Michael White should be, and I think we can all agree that Michael.
Well, I need you to take me to Michael. You keep promising. Come on, John. Let's do a triple date.
Right.
Oh, there you go, Lucky Pierre.
Now we're talking.
Now, what about what about who? Didn't we? Didn't we eat something recently? Oh no, that wasn't with you. Well, I'm sorry. Right. Not to.
Ouchie. Right.
No, it's not like
ouchie.
That.
I'll stay in the back.
What
seat.
About the? Okay, how about Melly? Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
What about the great young chefs of today? The John Frasers, the Joey Campanaros, Harold Dieterles, people who are doing what the fuck?
Do I need to put you on my back again and start carrying you, Josh?
Wait, hang on. I can help you here. Hang on. Please hold, people.
Who's the chef that I'm thinking of? All right, anyway.
Carla.
Yes! Absolutely.
2 points, Dune.
Carla. We need Carla. Well, you know what? If Carlo's not here because it's his day off, so... Because I have the short-term memory of... You know, the man from Memento.
But you know what I find so interesting, really, is that it's been a couple of years since I did my Last Supper, and yes. People are dying to tell you what their Last Suppers are. They're like, yo, hey, hello, Melanie, I ate at Krispy Kreme. You need to know, you need to try the, like, Krispy Kreme with the puff in the middle.
But I think that is, I don't think it's real because, you know, like, when I used to be single, I would go on the nerve dates. And they always say, like, what's the last 5 books you read? And it's always like, oh, well, like, the autobiography of that I, you know, like,
Old
Lolita.
Man and the Sea.
Yeah.
The, the Secret.
And we're like, what's your favorite bands? And it's like, everybody says, like, whoever they think, you know, like, you know.
Oh, I think people
Thom
are genuine.
York or somebody.
I mean, they email me pictures of food. Haven't you guys seen that phenomenon? I mean, it was just in the New York Times, but they're the worst pictures I've ever seen. Now, of course, I'm a photographer, but I'm not taking good pictures of my food either, but I'm not taking pictures of my food.
I just think, like, when somebody tells me that the last meal, I've had people tell me this many times, that the last meal that they'll ever want is a soba noodles. I've heard some, oh,
well,
I've,
then you need
know,
to slap them.
You know what? Yeah. Like, nobody
because
likes
I don't
soba
think that's
noodles.
My Last Supper worthy. But, John, what would be your Last Supper? Let's plan it right now.
Yeah,
come on.
I have no idea.
Get busy.
I really don't know.
What you say now, it's going to be embedded
know.
In...
I don't know. I was sitting here trying to come up with what I would want. I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
Sweet or savory? Let's start
oh,
there.
Oh, savory. 100%
oh, really?
Savory. Yeah.
Okay, would it be a chicken?
No.
Would it be a meat or a fish?
Or that boar that's sitting
above your
head. You
can't have, like, multi-course whatever. It's got to be, like...
Right.
Yes, he can. He can have whatever he wants.
I don't... No, because then you could just
Nazi.
Name all your favorite foods.
Right.
My Last Supper Nazi.
Right. I feel like... I mean, pizza is, you know, if given the choice, I love pizza. It's something that I just... I don't know why. It satisfies all of my senses.
From where?
Like, thick or thin? I'm from Chicago.
Thin.
Mm.
Thin. Yeah, you thin people. To win. Thin to win.
Where would it be from?
I don't know.
Dom?
I mean, that's a good one. I, you know, there's a place in my neighborhood that I love, and I eat there probably once a week. It's called Bitola on the Upper West Side. And
what's it called?
Bitola. It's an Italian restaurant.
What kind of pizza do you like from there?
I get the white pizza from there with ghetto fucking champignon de Paris mushrooms on top of it. It's delicious, but simple. I mean,
it's not ghetto when it's called champignon de Paris.
Right, it's true. How do you say ghetto in French? Ghetto.
Ghetto.
Well, that means... cake.
Yes, that's okay. So wait, everybody wants say I want sweet Last Suppers.
Really?
Oh my God, I bring me if they walked in the door right now with a fucking big thing of candy,
right.
Bring it. I would be like pushing you guys out of the way.
Yeah.
What about you, Josh? No sweets?
No, Melly. Nobody wants to have that.
Don't say hamburger.
I mean, like okay.
He's looking down on me, people.
It's not that I'm looking down on you. I mean, I'm just oriented towards. Salt and fat do for me emotionally
right.
What a lady gets from ice cream or bonbons or whatever.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's an emotional youth thing, too.
I wish that I tried to bring you my favorite thing on earth today called Thornton's chocolate smothered toffee.
Oh, that's good.
Yes,
I've had
please.
That.
You've had that at my house. However, I'm bringing it back, and we're going to all sit here and eat it and take a survey because it's the best thing on earth.
But Melly, that's not a meal. Like, the Last Supper is a whole meal.
Why not? You can have that with some wine, and then you can have some jelly babies. Thank you. This is delicious.
You know what?
By the way, we are having a feast here.
Yeah, well, by the way, we're eating calzones and pizza.
So when Josh is quiet, it's because he's busy eating.
Or thinking. No, eating.
But Josh has cooked at my house, and he's an amazing cook.
Tell.
Yes.
You know what? We have to take a break now. When we get back, I want you to tell John and our listeners about the meal that I cooked at your house. So, in the meantime, I'm Josh Ozersky, and this is the Mr. Cutlet Show.
I became a teen. I melted microphones instead of cones and ice cream. Music orientated, so when hip-hop was originated, fitted like pieces of puzzles, complicated. Because I grab the mic and try to say yes, y'all. They try to take it and say that I'm too small. Cool. Because I don't get upset. I kick a hole in the speaker, pull a plug, then I jet. Back to the lab without a mic to grab. So then I add all the rhymes I had, one after the other one. Then I make another one. To diss the opposite, then ask if the brother's done. I get a craving like I fiend for nicotine, but I don't need a cigarette, know what I mean? I'm raging, creeping up the stage, and don't it sound amazing? Cause every rhyme is made and thought of, cause it's sort of an addiction. Magnetized by the mixing, vocals, vocabulary, and verses just stuck in. The mic is a drain, no, volcanoes erupting. Rhymes overflowing, gradually growing. Everything is written in the code so it can coincide. My thoughts to God. 48 tracks to slide. The invincible microphone fiend rock him. Spread the word. Cause I'm N-E-F-F-E-C-T. A smooth operator operating correctly. But back to the problem, I got a habit. You can't solve it, silly rabbit. The prescription is a hypertone. That's heroin, I fiend for a microphone. Like heroin, soon as the bass kicks, I need a fix. Give me a stage and a mic and a mix, and I'll put you in a mood. Or is it a state of unawareness? Beware, it's the reanimator. A menace to a microphone, a lethal weapon or assassinator. If the people ain't stepping, you'll see a part of me that you never seen. When I'm fiending for a microphone, I'm the microphone fiend. After 12, I'm worse than a gremlin. Feed me hip-hop and I start trembling. The thrill of suspense is intense, you're horrified. But this ain't the cinemas of tales from the dark side. By any means necessary, this is what has to be done. Make way, cause here I come. My DJ cuts material. Grand Imperial. It's a must that I bust any mic you hand to me.
This is Josh Ozersky, and welcome back to the Mr. Cutlet Show. You know, every show we have a different musical theme for our interstitial songs. One time it was dead singer-songwriters. We had an Elliott Smith one. Today the theme is the geniuses of old-school hip-hop, and I'm highlighting the work of Eric B. and Rakim. I'm sure we all agree was seminal influence on all of us as rappers. Now, Melly...
Also I known made, as DJ Dunay.
Melly Mel. I actually made the best meal of my entire life
at Melly's house.
And tell everybody who the guests were.
Okay, so I have, being greedy and hungry all the time, very amazing dinner parties. And, well, not because I'm showing off amazing, but because I get other people in and they cook them. So they're amazing. So Josh came and cooked... courtesy of Creekstone / the Lafredas, who we heart, the most amazing cacophony of meat. He cooked for April Bloomfield, Eric Repair, who was the third chef?
Bobby Flay.
And Bobby Flay. And Bobby
and their spouses.
And their spouses, and a couple of my friends who have nothing to do with food except that they're greedy. And he cooked an amazing meal in my completely not industrial kitchen. And they all gathered around and oohed and aahed, and it was completely delicious. It was better the second time he cooked than the first. Because the first time he thought, oh, I'll cook risotto. And I wanted to shoot him in the eye.
Why? Risotto's good. Everyone
the risotto
likes it.
Took like 50 hours. You know, John. Are you going to cook risotto when you have... No.
He's on my side, Melly. He thinks you should wait for the food, not the other way around. But I made a mess and it took a long time. So the second time I did it simpler.
Yes, and it was super, super delicious. It's a legendary meal. You
have legendary
to come over,
meal.
John.
It
what,
was.
What was it?
Well, funny you should ask.
Yes, well done.
It was a they got that veal over there that's like the best veal. It's that Mennonite.
Amish, yep.
And it's the whole rib, you know? And you get it totally unfrenched, so there's that incredible milky white fat cap.
Yeah.
And then I did just what you would have done, which is I slow roasted it. I had the full double racks, and I crossed them like a cathedral style.
Very
and
old
then
school.
I rubbed them up with some fresh thyme and garlic and lots of salt and pepper and good olive oil, and I cooked them, and then I had morels because it was
spring,
and I cut the tops of the morels and I browned them up in the pan, and then I deglazed the pan with marsala and then thickened it with fresh raw heavy cream from a farm upstate, and so I made like a classic marsala morel gravy, and I had the. You know what I did is with the potatoes.
They were delicious.
You know how when you cook the potato gratin, only the top is good?
Mm-hmm.
No one really wants the inside.
No, not at all.
So I cooked the whole thing ahead of time, and then I took it and lifted it out of the pan and put the bottom onto a big nonstick griddle and left it there for 5 hours on ultra low so that the entire bottom crusted up without the liquid ever turning liquidy.
Was that the night with the duck fat that my husband still talks about?
No, the first night was the duck fat.
There was like an inch of duck fat all over the fucking kitchen. Like we were skating around.
I mean, John.
Ungrateful.
Right.
I mean, how can you, you know, that's part of the collateral damage, as we say.
When Picasso painted, there was paint on the floor.
See, John's kitchen at Dovetail is like immaculate.
Really?
Yeah, you could make microchips in it.
I noticed that when you arrange the wine and everything here, very nice. Are you a Capricorn?
No, I'm a Libra.
Oh.
Yeah.
What are you, Josh?
I am a Leo.
Leo.
I don't believe in horoscopes.
No, I don't either. I don't even know
but
what
it's
it means.
The quintessential. I'm the quintessential Leo personality. Right. That's what everyone tells me. Me and Clinton.
You and Clinton. Oh, uh-oh.
We love attention.
Yeah, fair enough.
Now,
So I was saying to John, I haven't been to your restaurant in a long time.
Yeah, you should come.
And because I want to come back, but what's different?
Yeah, I mean, we expanded the space, which I think we talked about last time I was here, but we expanded the space, so it's much larger and more comfortable. And on Mondays, I turned the restaurant into a vegetarian restaurant.
Oh, that's so cool.
So there's basically two columns to the menu. There's 20 dishes, and they're roughly all the same size. And one column is vegetable-focused, and it still has, you know, bacon, pork, fat, duck fat, and we're cooking with you know, less protein, but we're trying to use protein to highlight the vegetable, right? So we use things like bonito flakes and stuff like that.
Mm.
But really, you know, the star is whatever is in season, and that's, you know, being the vegetable. And the other side is vegetarian and vegan, where we're totally playing by the rules, you know, no honey, no, you know, we're doing the right thing.
That's
and the
gay.
Response has been fantastic.
No, I think that's cool.
Yeah. That's gay.
I know. Well, that's fine. But
well, you guys, you know,
it's not for everyone.
So many people, sure. I go on shoots, and every time I do a photo shoot, you have to bring food for the people because Tom Cruise is hungry. So there's a big, you know, the Phoenixes, Summer, Joaquin, they're all vegans. Yep. There are a lot of vegans.
Right.
So there's a big, there's a world of that.
Then you give them a celery or whatever.
No, you give them, I mean, there's only baby cakes. There's nowhere to go. Right. So I think.
What's the chef, John, that makes the salad that everyone loves? Like, he makes this big tweezer platter
Michelle
of salad.
Brass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever eaten that?
No, I haven't.
That can't be that good. I mean, really.
Well,
that's like the soba noodles. It's so wonderful, you know.
Right.
Give me a break.
I would. Okay, the first thing is this. You know, we are kind of from kids. Sort of, we grew up in a box where, you know, there has to be a protein, a starch, a vegetable on every plate. And if you actually start to sort of climb out of there and realize that a ripe peach is just as delicious as, you know, your lamb fat, which you've
fuck
been
it is.
They're both delicious in their own way when done well. And at some point, I mean, look, I eat meat. I don't eat it as much as I used to because I'm bored of it. Basically, I'm bored of it. And so the only time I really eat meat is when it's fucking delicious on top of a pizza.
Okay, here,
or
here.
Really, really great. John, otherwise, I'm sort of bored
by
it.
Can I tell you that I was a vegetarian for 20 years?
That's really?
A long time.
Yes.
Melanie?
Yes, I know. I
know. You never told me
I know.
That.
Please don't slap me. No, no, no. And I was, I started, and Tony Bourdain used to roll his eyes at me and be like, oh, God.
Right.
And I would cook it. I cooked an amazing dinner. He came to whatever at my house, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I was doing My Last Supper and went to, I just didn't want it.
Right.
I went to Comptoir in Paris and sat there with Danielle, and Danielle said, you must eat the charcuterie. And I thought, you know what, Danielle, you're fucking right. And
what,
I
are you
ate
say
it,
no to balloon?
And the skies lit up, and then I went on a meat frenzy.
Right.
A frenzy.
Like, really?
You would have been I was like, bam, bam.
Feast or famine.
You know, it was, yes. And then fast forward to now, I'm a little like, you know, backing off. I'm not eating.
Josh is so disappointed
in us.
Yeah. I guess for those of you that are just dabble, to whom it's just a hobby, the life. Let me tell you something. All right, game is out there, and either you play it or it plays you. That was a quote from Omar. Omar said that. I've been watching the Wire on discs with my girlfriend.
That's supposed to be really good.
Oh, it's so wonderful.
Girlfriend, fiancé.
Yeah,
she's
my fiancé.
Josh is getting married. I don't know if the listeners know that.
Yes, I hope that they'll
send presents.
Try to get in, you know, a quick tryst before
leaving the game.
He's available.
Now, those of you who haven't killed yourselves from boredom or frustration at listening to us may want to participate in this freewheeling conversation. And if you do, the number is 718-497-2128. I'll repeat that many times. Operators are standing by.
Yes.
We have a special Mr. Cutlets tote bag for everyone that pledges a side of beef.
Ooh.
Now, here's what I was going to ask. John, you said that you have got... Well, you know what? I'm going to... Maybe we'll take a little break... Because I want to have
trouble,
a deep
John.
Topic.
Right.
Deep topic I want to get
deep
into.
Thoughts.
Right.
And Melanie, I got more I want to ask you about with your country singers. But in the meantime, let's take a break on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
I'm going to say a few rhymes about white lines. Because every time you get high, you best put your mind. So the very next time you want to taste it, you can get a little hit of this. You're excited. Vision, dreams of passion. And all the while, I think of you. A very strange reaction. The more I see, the more I do. Baby, tell all your friends they can go my way. Pay your toll, sell your soul. Pound for pound costs more than gold. The longer you stay, the more you pay. My white line go a long way. Either up your nose or through your vein. With nothing to gain except killing your brain.
Rock. Freeze. Rock, 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 rock. Okay, so I'm Josh Ozersky. I'm back here. We have our own white lines. Salt and Sugar. And I'm here with John Fraser of Dovetail Restaurant, one of our most talented young chefs, and the beautiful Melanie Dene, who is the author of My Last Supper, which is an... I mean, really, if you don't have... If you have a nice books of foods, this is the one nice book of chefs that you should have. I mean, that she's a great photographer, and they really... There's just really nothing quite like it. But I have a question now for you, John.
We just learned that she also did it on the line, which is a fantastic
book. She did it on the line?
Oh, yeah.
She just did a book where she went and took pictures of all the country singers. We've got to talk about that, too.
Right.
She met Charlie Pride. Now.
And lived to tell the tale.
Right.
Now.
Very busy.
John, you must be familiar by now with Sam Sifton's review of Shoshone Hergott in the New York Times.
Yep.
You and I have spoken in the past at great length about both the vicissitudes of attempting to launch a 3-star restaurant and the acrimony, the caprices, the uncertainty and arbitrary malice that frequently attends the assignment of stars by major media.
So what you're saying is you have a problem with stars?
No, I don't have a problem with stars.
All right.
I have a problem with people doing stars where the stars are like, there's no rhyme or reason to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've talked in the past about the 3-star firing squad.
Right.
Do you think that Sean Hergott got gypped out of his 3rd star?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. I do too. Yeah.
I do 3.
Mm-hmm.
Now, none of us are pals, as far as I know,
not
with Sean Hergott.
No.
Nor will I say that that's my favorite restaurant to eat in. I'd rather eat at Dovetail, say. I mean, it is a certain kind of very precise and fastidious.
I think that's fair. You're being fair. Honestly, I do.
But 3-star restaurant to me means, you know, what we call haute cuisine. That it's not just good food made well, but it's sort of set up as a special experience, kind of like a dream.
Yeah.
It's like a dream meal.
With other things, with service.
Right, flawless crystal and china, the service, the wines that like you could never in a million years figure out for yourself. And the guy didn't do anything wrong, but Sifty gave him... I went on Ozersky TV, and I railed against it, but, you know...
Was that your iPad? I have to ask you.
No, okay. I'm afraid not.
You have an iPad?
It was a prop.
I pretended...
It was a prop.
I didn't see that.
A member of Team Cutlets that has an iPad that lent it to
me. The thing about iPad that I don't like is the name. It reminds me of MaxiPad. Sorry to taint it for
all
of
you. I was just about to say that.
So to speak. Funny you should mention. Anyway, John, I mean, I detected a powerful animus in that review against not just Sean Hergott's restaurant, but against the idea of 3-star restaurants.
Right. 3-star restaurants as they used to be. I think you have to kind of put a caveat to that.
Well, if you decide to give a 3-star restaurant to everybody that hands you a pork bun.
Right.
You know.
Well, let's not be guilty of doing exactly what you're claiming he's doing.
Which is what?
Which is, you know, being, you know, slanted and not quote unquote fair. By saying something like pork bun.
It's not about that. The point is like...
Because you immediately make your argument, you know, null and void by doing something like that.
I don't think I do make my argument null and void. When I say a pork bun, for those of my listeners that are not intimately familiar with my most boring feuds and vendettas, I'm not on the David Chang train. I don't think that I've never eaten in Co because I'm banned from all those restaurants.
But I thought you were back on.
No.
No,
I was never back on.
Bad relationship.
No, it's David and I are like, we have a bad romance. But no, he hates me, frankly speaking. And I don't blame him, but I ate at Sambar a lot. And Sambar's not a 2-star restaurant. And I've never eaten in Co, but they don't have bus boys or tables or anything. And you can't give that a 3-star,
no
matter
how
good the pork
bun
tastes.
But wait, can I just segue to try to save this tension into one thing? Did you see those pictures on the internet of Sam Sifton having the Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Well, yeah, who takes... Yeah. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Who takes notes
wild.
On a double
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, I know, but I love that. I love the notes.
I know, it is cool. I got to answer him.
That was
pretty cool.
That was the best part. That and the
He looked so serious,
and
too.
And he had no hair. I was...
Well, no, he's a baldy.
Yeah, but I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, poor him. He was just sitting there and, you know, wherever.
Listen,
that's called working for him.
Poor
so
him.
You know, that's working. That's eating for us. That's working for him.
I ate that sandwich, and I didn't have, you know, paparazzi crouching in the bushes.
But was it a Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Of course it was.
And that's who you're doing your book on, right?
Oh, I'm doing my book on the Colonel, yes. Right. But I'd like to return to the subject.
Sorry.
That's quite all right.
My segue.
John, I'm not looking for you to dog David or whatever, but you're someone that there's a lot of energy and effort goes into making a restaurant of that caliber, a 3-star restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is a sentiment at play today, which was articulated by Sifton, but which is in no way limited to him, that the mere effort of making a nice restaurant with all the full service and everything is in some way vain or outdated and deserves, you know, some to sort of be swept into the dustbin of history.
Right. I don't know. It's hard for me to really comment on it because I have really strong opinions about the media in general, you know, which includes the New York Times, and I think that they're super, super important, number one, because, you know, they call attention to all the hard work that we do, and sometimes they kill us and dog us and make us better and all, you know, all the rest of that. But what I think it's most important to look at is what Sifton has said since day one, right? From the very first moment that he, you know, put the pen in his hand and started writing the review, who he's reviewed, what, and who has gotten stars, etc. You know, you go back to like a Roach.
That's like totally random,
right? It's interesting, but you know, it's not an accident who he's reviewing and the cadence of the reviews. You know when Tom Colicchio got his review, next was Sean. You know, I mean, there's. None of that is an accident. In other words, you know, there's a grand plan here.
Well, what is it?
I'm not sure yet. That's why I'm kind of reserving comment, because I'm not sure. I'm still waiting. I mean, Frank Bruni, in a way, became predictable, and pleasurably so. Like, you kind of got to know him. In
right.
other words, and I don't know Sam Sifton.
Well, he
yet.
Doesn't.
Yeah. But is it it's too like soon? Is it because
it's too
I
soon?
Know.
I disagree. I mean, I want to wholeheartedly disagree with you here on that, because you know the way that we as chefs are given a couple of months to, you know, get our shit together before we get smacked around in a review. So should the writer for the New York Times.
I don't think that's true. First of all, the writer in the New York Times shouldn't even step onto the plate until he has an established, verifiable sensibility that's familiar to everybody.
Well, I kind
this of... This is the... It's like making somebody... It's like sending making somebody the Pope that was just like, you know, the deacon in Ventnor, New Jersey or something.
But Josh, I sort of agree, because in photography, I get one chance. I mean, I'm taking the picture. They're not like, oh, she'll warm up. She's going to do better. She's going to find her way. She's going to find her... It's sort of true. I mean, with you as a wordsmith, me as a photographer... But no, but oh, it's true.
What?
What's so
he loves
funny?
That. He yeah, loves
I
that
hate,
word.
I hate
oh, sorry.
It's
whatever.
Right.
Sorry.
Better than blogger, right. Anyway.
Right. No, but like your word. I mean, we don't get a second chance.
It's bullshit. Like, bullshit.
Okay.
How can you say you don't get a second chance?
Because if
how many pictures do you take in one sitting?
It's true.
Oh no! In the sitting, I get a ton. I like. I'll come and photograph you, and I'll take.
Yeah, but if she fucks up the sitting.
But if I turn them in and they don't like it, then it's over. Because that's not what I'm presenting to the diner or the. I'm presenting one.
So are you saying that it's not okay to get one wrong?
No, I'm saying that I'm like, you're in the kitchen and you're preparing like I am 500 snaps,
right.
And then you're taking one out.
Right.
If that one out isn't good enough, then I am done. Dunzo, cut me off.
Look, the question isn't whether or not Sifton should be allowed to turn in a bad review. I mean, obviously, he's already turned in many, and so have all his peers. None of us, you know, I mean, like none of us, even Ted Williams only hit 4 times out of 10, you know what I mean? But like, and I don't even want to make this about Sifton and have it be like I'm attacking him or whatever.
You already did that.
I mean,
Look, you basically mugged him, stole his shoes in the cold.
Listen, I could have said a lot worse things about him, and he could say many worse things about me.
Easily.
But the fact is, he is articulating something that you're seeing with a lot of critics. Certainly, I've seen Platt says it, Richmond says it, they all say it, and there's a feeling in the air, and he used it as essentially a bludgeon against Sean Hergott, that the very idea of haute cuisine, of precision cooking, with full traditional service, is somehow invalid. And I would think that you would have balls enough, at least, John, to stand up for the thing you've devoted your life to.
Well, I know, but I mean, I'll say a couple of things. I mean, I'm on the fence on this whole thing. I mean, the first thing is, the only problem that I really have is he's saying that he has a problem with that kind of cuisine, the old style should die, and yet he gave 3 stars to Le Grand Oui, right? That's the only thing that it just doesn't really work with. The logic doesn't really fit. So, like I said, I'm still trying to understand who he is, and I really got to know Bruni by reading his reviews, and I feel like I got to know him, you know, by studying and by understanding, you know, what he likes and how he saw food and what he thought was important inside of restaurants. And I'm still trying to figure that out with Sifton, but I think that Sifton has something to say, and I'm looking forward to figuring out what that is. I'm still looking for it, in other words.
I think you're going to keep looking. I don't think that he has a real centered sensibility.
I do. I really do.
He's flailing around. That's why you see
the
weird random reviews and him, like, the one comfort. This is my opinion. I mean, I shouldn't really go into this. And the Ripper always used to tell me never, you know, talk about other writers like chefs, never badmouth other chefs. Mm-hmm. And he's a hell of a guy, and I loved his food writing in the Times. He's a very good eater. He's an excellent writer, a real journalist, which is something that, you know, I have great respect for. But as a food critic, he's flailing blindly around trying to find something because his standards are that of a Brooklyn middle brow that loves tacos and weird ethnic food and barbecue and stuff like, you know, that he's heard about and his friends have heard about. And I just don't get the sense that he has any great knowledge of or love for the kind of high-end cooking that is, like, you know, a real specialist's art. I mean, it's not even fun. If you don't like those meals, like, you have to love those meals. Right. To go and sit in that room in the chair for 4 hours
three
and have them bringing
you
all that
three times.
So true.
I mean, at least three times.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you have to really get turned on by that stuff. I mean, a lot of them started out that way, and then they get worn out.
Right.
But Sifty, I mean, like, you see, that's why he'd rather write about a chinch. I mean, he doesn't know what to do next. And the writing itself is also,
The other thing is you have to be careful when you start, you know, cracking the whip on reviewers is that you basically invalidate what the nice things they've said as well. So what you're saying basically is you disagree. If you disagree with his review of show, then you're also saying the same thing about, you know, Tom Colicchio, Maria, you know,
I don't agree with that because I might not like a picture that one of my peers takes, and then I might like other pictures that they take. I mean, because I thought that one was weak doesn't mean that I think that they're all weak. And then sometimes we also have to remember, you guys, the situations. I mean, for me at least, I go into a situation and it might be I arrive to photograph you and it's like you're busy, the kitchen's just caught on fire, you're not bothered, you're not there to be photographed, you're there to cook and to make good food. So I think that all those things, we're talking about the highest echelon of stuff, and we have to take those other things into account. Sometimes I try to give my peers a break a little bit, a tiny tiny teensy weensy little bit.
Well, maybe you're right, Millie, and there are analogies. We have to take a break, but there's analogies too, you know.
Let's
with photography.
Come back.
So let's come back, talk about a little bit more on the Mr. Cutlet Show.
Higher, baby. Get higher, baby. Get higher, baby. And don't ever come down.
Freebies!
Driven snow. And now I'm having fun, baby. It's getting kind of low. I need some one-on-one, baby. Baby.
You know what? This is so interesting, Melly, and so interesting, John, and we haven't even talked about your countries. I think we should have you guys come back. We should do a whole nother show, talk about Melly's new book about food photography, blog photography, which is another whole issue entirely you have an opinion about.
Wah, wah.
And then also, John, let's put you on the spot more and make you criticize the people that are going to make decisions about your restaurants in public.
I don't think that I was very critical at all of Sifton.
I know you weren't.
Yeah, I mean, because I don't think we're ready for that yet. I don't think it's time to be critical of Sifton yet.
Well, I think we should take up all these. Let us table these issues for the next show. And please come back again on the Mr. Cutlet Show.